All right, Matt. I've noticed here the last couple of weeks, Ashley, it seems like every couple nights or so, she's been taking me to different places. Like, she's always just taking me here to this one place, taking me here to the other. But joke's on her. I keep finding my way back.
Food's good.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales.
All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
Man, I'm doing all right.
Good. Good. So before we get into it, we want to say go check out the Podbelly Network at podbelly.com. You can find a list of shows that we're happy to be associated with, and you can find some tips and tricks on podcasting. If you're looking to get into podcasting, it's a good resource for you. Also, go over to patreon.com/graveyardtales. Sign up to become a patron. We've got three different levels. And just recently, we started dropping a new show for our $10 a month patrons. And it's kind of a catch-all show. Whatever we want to do, we just do it there. It's uncensored. It's, you know, it gets a little blue sometimes. We've had guests on so far. We have had our lovely spouses on. And you should go over there and check it out. But we've also got a $1 and a $5. And everybody get a bonus episode a week. The $5 and $10, they get the video versions of that episode. And they get the ad-free versions of the main episodes. So if you don't want to hear ads, you can go over there, sign up to become a patron, and get our ad-free stuff. But we think there's going to be something over there on Patreon that you're going to like.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we always try to thank everybody that has donated to the show. I mean, you guys you're amazing. And we appreciate the support so much. We just felt like we needed to give you guys more.
Right.
So yeah, go check it out. Now's a great time, to jump in, and become a patron. And I think you're going to enjoy it.
Yep. While you're on the internet doing all that stuff, go over and give us a rate and review on iTunes or whatever app you listen to us on. It helps with the algorithm, because if people search paranormal podcast, if we got a bunch of reviews and ratings there, then we're going to pop up in their feed a little more. And I just heard, and because of the way we record this, you may have found this out already and we may be late to the game, but I just heard that Apple Podcast has stopped with the new update automatically downloading podcast. So if you have that turned on and you're like, there's no new shows for Graveyard Tales. Yes, there are. You just need to go into your settings and set it to automatically download. And that's why I'm an Android guy, not an iPhone guy, but that's, that's a whole nother argument.
Or, you know, if you're like me, you use a different podcatcher,
right?
Look, no offense to Apple or anybody that uses it, that the Apple Podcast app is there. Let's put it this way. There's better ones out there.
Yep, that's true.
You know, that will catch all your shows and put them all in one spot, and you can set them up the way you want to get them and listen to them. But yeah, make sure if you're an Apple Podcast user, make sure that you're going in there and checking your settings so that you get the newest shows.
Yep, exactly. All right, Matt, so that's all the housekeeping that I got. So why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
All right, so tonight it's another cryptid show. This is actually one that we've mentioned in the past. This is one of Adam's, you know, he loves cryptids anyway. But he loves this one in particular. And look, I'll be honest, I thought, okay, we're going to have a lot of like old tales, you know, the from the 1700s, people talking about these things. I found ones that happened within the last 5-10 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to talk about puckwudgies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So if you're going, what in the hell is a puckwudgie?
Like Ashley did tonight.
Yeah. It sounds much dirtier than it is.
Yep.
But when we get to talking about it, I think you're gonna realize that you know what they are. You just haven't heard that name before associated with it. But there have actually been modern sightings, modern experiences with puckwudgies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? This is not like a Bigfoot sighting or Loch Ness Monster. Okay? These are like little goblins.
Yeah.
And people have had things happen to them, and they are attributing this to puckwudgies, which absolutely blew me away. But then when you read the stories, you're kind of like, huh, maybe there are some puckwudgies around here.
Right, right.
The next time Amanda can't find something, I'm going to go, the puckwudgies took it.
Yep, yep, exactly, exactly. And your only drawback is the region you're in, but she won't know that. So
that's right. She doesn't care. I saw a Loch Ness Monster in the backyard last week.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you got a pool. It could be there. Mm-hmm. So as we always say, go check our sources down in the bottom of the show notes. You can find where we found all this information. You can keep going if puckwudgies interest you. Obviously, Matt and I have not gotten up to their habitat and gone out on a puckwudgie hunt recently. So we've had to get the experiences and stuff from people who have talked about them, written about them, and you can find those down in the show notes.
Hey, speak for yourself, man. I've
been
hunting puckwudgies forever.
You're a puckwudgie hunter from way back.
Just like saying it.
Yeah, hey, Ashley heard us say puckwudgie a little bit ago, and she's like, excuse me? Yeah. I got the puckwudgies in college one time. Penicillin cured it. But you may ask, what are the puckwudgies? Now, we have briefly mentioned puckwudgies when we talked about the fae, but we didn't go in depth into them. And the puckwudgie are a type of fae folk, and they're featured in the folklore of diverse tribes, from the Wampanoag tribe of Massachusetts in southern New England to the Algonquin tribe of the Great Lakes region. And according to various legends, it was best to leave these creatures alone. And when we get into it, you'll understand why. Now, puckwudgie stands for the translation of puckwudgie, they say, means little man of the forest, which Matt's nickname always meant big man of the forest, because he liked to run through nude a lot of times in college. But, you know, that's a whole nother
college. Christian. Hell, last week.
Well, valid point. I was trying to give you some grace there, Matt. But puckwudgie is the most common name for these creatures. You'll see it spelled differently and maybe some said differently. But there are several different names across the different groups of people that they're known by. And there are a couple different descriptions of them. They all kind of fall within the same general group, but we'll look at the couple different ways they're described. They're said to be 2 to 3 feet tall, goblin-like creatures that lurk in forest, and they have light white skin and light brown hair. But they are also described as having gray skin, large ears and noses and fingers, and from the back, they may resemble a porcupine, but from the front, they are a blend of like half troll, half human that walks upright. And that one is the one you see depicted most often in here. A lot of times they'll say, oh, they've got like a dog nose or a pig nose. It's a snout rather than a human nose, but it's large, and they've got large exaggerated features. But if you see them from the back, they do kind of have a porcupine type quality to the hair that's running down from the top of their head down their back. Now, other legends say that Pukwudgies look like trolls with dog-like noses, and Pukwudgies are said to be hard to spot because they're masters of disguise and can easily transform into other animals. So if they don't want you to see them as a Pukwudgie, you may see them as a porcupine. You may see them as a deer or something. You know, they're trickster fae.
Yeah. And it's just a way that they can, you know, get closer to you, approach you, without causing alarm.
Right.
You know,
right.
So if it looks like a fox or a wolf or something like that, you might not be as nervous seeing something like that as opposed to this little creature that's crawling around out in the woods.
Goblin-like creature, yeah. Now, the physical appearance and behavior of the Pukwudgies, they seem to make them mostly related to European gremlins. So if you're thinking, if you're in Europe somewhere and you're like, I've heard of these things. Well, you may have heard of them, but you also may be kind of attributing them to the gremlins because they're mostly a North American cryptid.
Right.
And they're known to build huts of grass and sticks in and around different caves and along the banks of rivers and forested areas. And many are also known to make and wear shirts that they make out of grass and or bark. So they're very much a person of the forest. You know, if they're making shirts out of grass and bark and they're not stealing them off of clotheslines from people, you know, they are very well adapted to the forest. Now, like I said, they can transform into animals and they use their mischievous ways for their own good. They've been seen most recently in Cape Cod, Massachusetts, Indiana, Lake Superior area of Central Ontario, Canada, Northern Minnesota, Northern Wisconsin, and Northern Michigan. But long before settlers came to North America, they were said to inhabit wilderness areas across the whole of North America. So it seems like in recent times, their home range has been squashed some.
Yeah. They're a victim of deforestation, just like
everything else. Now, in folk tales, Pukwudgies can be mischievous or downright malicious. They're equipped with magical abilities like invisibility, shape-shifting, and the power to shoot poison arrows. And they've been said to have to lure people to their deaths. They'll use magic, create fire, all sorts of stuff to grab humans' attention and lure them further into the forest and then kill them. Now, the threat that Pukwudgies posed tended to vary from region to region. You know, in some places they were considered benign, even helpful to humans, but in others they were mischievous but harmless, and then in yet others they were murderous. So it depends on, and I'll get into the origin of them, but to me, what I've noticed is it depends on the relationship that the humans have with the Pukwudgies will determine how they react and how they act toward humans.
Right. And, you know, when we talked about other gremlin or goblin-like creatures, especially during our episode on the Fae, there were some, like brownies, that were very helpful. You know, if you had brownies in your home, you know, your home was usually clean, and it was secure. You know, things didn't go missing. You know, if you misplaced something, brownies would help you find it by bringing it back to you. Unless you did something to anger the brownies. If you did something that was disrespectful, then you could count on stuff going missing. you know, they weren't really dangerous necessarily. You know, they weren't murderous, but definitely mischievous and caused people, you know, they was attributed to causing a lot of trouble in homes because, you know, they took things, they ruined things. So, you know, if you had clothes and you woke up, all your clothes had been torn up or were dirty, your cooking utensils were gone, things like that. You know, they attributed it to the house goblins, you know, the brownies or whatever. And Pukwudgies have very similar interactions with humans as long as, you know, the human respects them and doesn't try to like capture them or do something that would be considered disrespectful.
Right, right. Now, the Wampanoag tribe has a particularly detailed origin story of the Pukwudgies. So we need to look at that and it'll kind of help, I guess, help you understand why they are said to be murderous and tricksterish. But it says, legend has it that the creatures originally got along well with humans, but humans were distracted by their relationship with Mawshop, a giant, kind-spirited deity who created the landmass we now know as Cape Cod. Well, the jealous Pukwudgies were offended that they weren't as well loved as Mawshop and began to cause more and more mischief. The Pukwudgies started behaving terribly towards the humans, so the Wampanoags needed to do something. After the Wampanoags had a talk with Mawshop's wife, Mawshop exiled the Pukwudgies and forcefully spread them far and wide throughout North America. So, see, there's why they were originally all across North America. Mm-hmm. However, many of the Pukwudgies found their way back and instigated a more belligerent relationship with humans. So they were kidnapping local children and killing the adults. And they had a more belligerent relationship with Mawshop, eventually killing Mawshop's 5 sons. Now, some variations even suggest that they killed Mawshop himself by tricking him and luring him into a large body of water. And this legend coincides with the giant disappearing from Wampanoag folklore. So at some point, Mawshop the giant was just out of their folklore, and they say it's because the Pukwudgie killed him.
Right, yeah. He just vanished.
Mm-hmm. And they blamed it on the Pukwudgie. Well, now, their powers depend on which tribe, you ask. A human who annoyed a Pukwudgie might just be the victim of some unpleasant trickery, but they might also be pushed from a cliff, shot with fiery arrows, or have their children stolen. Now, Pukwudgies could also create fire and orbs. So, like, what people say are these, I guess, ball lightning type things.
Yeah.
They would create these and lure people into deep wooded area to their doom. Now, they had the power of invisibility and in some places could transform into dangerous animals like cougars. Perhaps the most frightening of all is the rumor that they had power over the spirits of the people that they had killed. So if they killed you, then they could make your spirit do their bidding.
Right. And that's terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
On top of all the other powers that these little people seem to have. I mean, invisibility, you know, that's enough. That allows them to do what they want to do. But then they had that ability to control and create fire. And, you know, if you see a fire in the woods and you think, okay, there, maybe it's a forest fire and you go to investigate. Maybe there's somebody out there camping. You go to investigate. It was an easy way to lure humans deeper into the woods where, you know, that's where the Pukwudgies operated. I mean, you're on their home turf. So they've got the advantage. They want to pull humans in there if they're going to try to kill them or whatever.
Right. Now, I mentioned that depending on the tribe, you might have different tellings of the relationship with the Pukwudgie. Now, in the Chippewa, Ojibwe, and other Great Lakes tribes, the Pukwudgie is considered mischievous, but basically good-natured creatures, and they play rather harmless tricks on people. So, you know, wedgies, noogies, swirlies, stuff like that.
Short sheet your bed, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Tie your socks together.
Right.
Shoelaces together, all that
stuff. Nothing too bad, but they just mess with you. Now, in the Abenaki and other Northeast Algonquin tribes, a Pukwudgie can be dangerous, but only to people who treat him badly and with disrespect. So, you leave it alone, it'll leave you alone. If you pick on it, it's going to hit you with a tube sock full of oranges.
That's right.
So, it'll beat you up.
It won't leave a bruise.
Yeah, yeah. Now, in the Wampanoag and other tribes of southern New England, they are unpredictable and rather dangerous. So, there, you don't even have to do anything to them. They just see you, and they'll attack you with prison shivs and stuff like that.
Prison shivs.
I'm just trying to, for each one of those, I was trying to think of something to go with it. But now, one of the first mentions of Pukwudgies in literature comes from Henry Wadsworth Longfellow's poem, The Song of Hiawatha, which refers to the mischievous Pukwudgies that kill the giant Quassend by pelting him with pine cones. Longfellow was inspired by Henry Rowe Schoolcraft, who in turn based his work on Ojibwe folklore as told to him by his part Native American wife, Jane. Now, Pukwudgies are often tied to specific locations even today. Many reported sightings come from the woods of Massachusetts. And in fact, Matt will probably talk about this too, but I got to mention it. The police in Freetown, Massachusetts have put up a Pukwudgie crossing sign near the Freetown State Forest.
Yeah. I think it's fantastic. I sent you a picture of that.
Yeah.
It was essentially like an April Fool's prank for them to put it up, but there was a reason behind it.
Yeah.
You know, this is where the story originates.
Right.
And it's cool that the legends persist today.
Right. And that's the thing. Many people say that the Pukwudgie shouldn't be left in history. A lot of rumors say that their, quote, nasty forest tricks continue to this day in forested areas of Massachusetts where the Wampanoag people once lived.
So what, taking them out of the history would get rid of them?
No, they're saying don't relegate them just to history.
Oh.
It needs to be continued to this day.
Yeah, it's an active tale.
Yep.
Yeah. As Adam mentioned, you know, Freetown, Freetown is a state park in Fall River, Freetown in Lakeville, Massachusetts. And, you know, Fall River, it's already got some kind of crazy, creepy stories.
Mm-hmm.
It's got more than its fair share of the violent rumors, because it's the home of Lizzie Borden.
Oh yeah.
You know,
that's
of
right.
course, you know, she killed her father and stepmother with an axe in the 1890s. The Pukwudgie story, is even darker, in the Freetown State Forest. There is a 100-foot cliff known as the Ledge, and it overlooks a quarry. Now, there have been several suicides at the Ledge by people not known to be mentally ill.
Hmm.
Not to say you have to be mentally ill to commit suicide, but it definitely plays a factor.
Yep.
But a lot of people blame the Pukwudgies on luring these people to their deaths because they had no indication of being suicidal.
Right, right.
And for these stories, it just didn't make sense that these people would go out in the woods and jump off a 100-foot cliff to their death just on a whim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think most people will show some signs of having that potential before the actual act.
Right.
So the Puckwudgies, you know, get some of the blame, you know, for this.
Adam, have you ever tried to break a habit?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and the funny thing is we don't talk a lot about good habits. We tend to always refer to habits as being bad.
Right.
So, you know, breaking bad habits, it's really difficult. But the folks at Fume look at it a little bit differently. Instead of just completely cold turkey stopping a bad habit, what if you replace the bad in the habit with something good? Okay? Makes it a little bit easier, you know, makes it better, and it puts you in a position where you can succeed in breaking those bad habits.
Right.
Fume is an innovative, award-winning, flavored air device that helps you break those bad habits. Instead of vapor, Fume uses flavored air. And instead of electronics, Fume is completely natural. And instead of the harmful chemicals, Fume uses delicious flavor. So, you get it, right? We're going to replace the bad in a habit with something good. So, Fume is good. It's a habit you're free to enjoy. And it makes replacing your bad habit that much easier.
That's right. You know, your Fume uses an adjustable airflow dial, and it's designed with movable parts and magnets for fidgeting. So it gives your fingers a lot to do, which is helpful for de-stressing and anxiety while you're trying to break that bad habit. I know for me, and I know it is for you too, Matt, it's a lot about the ritual of the hand doing something.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. And so the cool thing about Fume is you've got that device in your hand, which takes the place of that ritual, but you're not getting anything harmful. You're just breathing in a nice tasting flavored air, and you can sit there and snap and twist on the Fume like a little fidget toy. I was shocked with how good the flavors are in Fume. It spans the gap of a bunch of different flavors. You've got like cracked pepper and maple, all the way to like orange or mint. And so it's cool. It uses like a oil on a little cartridge thing that as you breathe past, you get that. So you feel like you're inhaling something, but you're just breathing air in. And it's a nice looking, sturdy device. It's part wood, part metal. So it feels good in your hand. It's nicely weighted. And Fume actually just released a magnetic stand for the Fume device. So there's no more losing it around the house. You can just pop it on that magnetic stand, and it's built with fidgeting in mind. So while you're sitting there, you know, at your desk and doing something, you can put it on there and spin your Fume around on it. So it's extra little fidget tool if that's what you're into. So if you want to start this year off right with a good habit, you can go to tryfume.com, that's TRYFUME.com/tales, TALES, and get the journey pack today. Fume is giving our listeners of Graveyard Tales 10% off when they use our code TALES, TALES.
Yeah, so go to tryfume.com/tales and get the journey pack today. Again, Graveyard Tales listeners get 10% off when they use our promo code TALES, that's TALES, and help make starting the good habit that much easier. Massachusetts police, they look at Puckwudgies as kind of a joke or a prank, but the people who have reported seeing them say, this is no joke. And one Massachusetts woman reported seeing a Puckwudgie in the forest who continued to pester her by tapping on her window at night as she slept.
Hmm.
Now, we're going to get into more detail on that story in a little bit.
That would be terrible, though.
Yeah. But let's look at this story. This is very interesting. And remember I said these are recent, okay? I'm not going to tell you something that happened in 1871.
Okay. Right.
So I found two incidences that happened to a family in Lawrence, Massachusetts, on a blog about New England folklore. The story was from 2019.
Okay. Oh, wow.
And the writer mentions that this occurred about 30 years prior. So we're talking about the late 80s, early 90s when these events occurred. I mean, this is modern.
Yeah, that's real modern.
So the first story happens to, they refer to this lady as Miss S. Okay, so the first incident happened to Miss S's brother, Bob. Now, he was just a child at the time, maybe 7 or 8. And he was watching TV with some of his cousins at his grandparents' house in Lawrence, Massachusetts. And they were sitting on the couch, which faced the TV, but had its back toward a doorway in another room. As they sat there watching TV, Bob felt someone pull on the back of his hair. Now, he thought it was one of his cousins, specifically his cousin Sandra, and he told her to stop. But Sandra denied pulling his hair, and a few seconds later, he felt it again. So again, he blamed Sandra for doing it, and she still said she didn't. A few more seconds passed, and Bob once again felt someone tug on his hair. So he turned around, at this point being pretty angry, expecting to see one of his cousins hiding behind the couch coming out to yank on his hair. But instead, he saw something else. Instead of one of his cousins, he saw a little old lady with long white hair.
Weird.
And the writer says, when I say little, I mean very small. Like she was only 2 to 3 feet tall. When she saw Bob looking at her, she quickly started to run towards the front door of the house. She disappeared into thin air before she reached it. Now, Bob, understandably, was surprised. That's an understatement. But he blurted out what he had seen to his grandmother, and she said, "Don't worry, they're friendly."
Hmm.
As if this happens all the time.
Yeah, as if it's a common occurrence.
You're just learning how life works around here, bud.
Yeah.
Now, the second incident occurred one day when Bob's mother took him and his cousins, including Sandra, out to the movies. After the movie was over, they returned to their grandparents' house. The door was locked. Now, no one was supposed to be home, so they were surprised to look through the window, and there was a lamp on in the living room. So Sandra looked through the window to see if she could see her grandparents, and she jumped back and screamed, "I'm getting the F out of here."
Tit.
So Bob's mother stepped up to the window and looked inside, and she saw a very short old man with long white hair run out of the living room. Said she gathered up the kids and they left.
Yeah.
Now, they say in retrospect, they should have known something was odd happening in the grandparents' home. They would sometimes find the tin of coffee open and spilled onto the floor, and bottles of Coca-Cola stored in the attic opened and half drunk.
Hmm.
When asked about these things, the grandparents would just shrug and say they had rats. But could rats take a bottle cap off of a glass bottle?
Probably not. They don't have thumbs.
So, you know, here is a family who has a long history of interactions with Pukwudgies. And the grandmother even saying, "Don't worry, they're friendly."
Yeah.
But you can imagine how shocking this would be to have multiple experiences of these little old people running around and pulling pranks in the house. And I would dare say that the Coca-Cola stored in the attic would, I don't store food in my attic.
No.
Even beverages, even if I bought them in bulk, I wouldn't put them in the attic. So this makes me think that this was for them. The grandparents put, you know, Cokes up in the attic specifically for the Pukwudgies.
Yeah.
As a way to, you know, to placate them and ensure that their behavior stayed friendly and playful as opposed to them turning more mischievous.
Yep. And you hear about a bunch of old timers who they would, you know, leave offerings to fae folk.
Oh yeah.
To appease them. And I mean, we even talked about it in our fae episode. It's probably a good idea to do stuff like that if you know you've got fae activity.
Uh-huh.
So I agree. I think you're spot on with that, that they are leaving Coca-Cola offerings. Mm-hmm. And that's probably not the only thing they're leaving up there. That's just what you see evidence of. You know, yeah. They're probably leaving food that is being eaten and you just don't see the evidence of it.
Even if you have a garden, making a fairy circle or a little fairy altar,
mm-hmm.
where it's pretty and it's kept clean and you put regular offerings there, then your flowers will bloom and thrive because the fae will ensure that happens.
Yeah.
Okay. And then when you see those little things like garden gnomes stuck in a flower garden, little fairies with wings, all that stuff, that's where it comes from.
Right.
It is the idea that you offer the fae, you know, something to keep your garden growing and beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we were talking about earlier the Wampanoag people having, you know, legends of the Pukwudgies, but a lot of indigenous people have legends of the Pukwudgies. One of the most popular places to see them is in Mound State Park in Anderson. Now, these Pukwudgies come from the legends of the, you're going to have to help me, Adam. Is this the Lenape?
I think you're right. Yeah.
Lenape.
Yeah.
The Lenape tribe. Okay.
That's how I've always said it. I could be wrong, but.
Okay. I couldn't find an accurate pronunciation of it. So, but the Lenape people who lived in Indiana prior to white settlers, and author and amateur archaeologist Paul Starchman claims to have encountered the Pukwudgies numerous times and wrote on his experiences and the experiences of others in his book, The Pukwudgies of Indiana. A Starchman's first encounter with the Pukwudgies was in 1927 when he was only 10 years old. Starchman said that he was hiking alone on a trail in the park and he suddenly saw a little man half his size. The little man had dull blonde hair that covered his head like a helmet, which left his round ears to protrude. So he had like a little bowl cut and his ears were sticking out to the side.
That's a funny look.
I know. I think, you know, I looked like that when I was a kid. You know, I was a Pukwudgie.
I was thinking about doing it now. Grow that hair out.
Now, Paul Starchman interviewed many Indiana residents who had encountered the Pukwudgies in their lives. He chose to keep their identities anonymous because of skeptics. So Eloise H. was one of these people, and he interviewed her while she was living at a nursing home in Anderson, Indiana. She remembers playing alone in the park and was approached by a group of little people who seemed curious about her and what she was doing. Eloise said that they had high-pitched voices and spoke a language that she could not understand. She experienced this again when she was older, hiding alone in the nearby woods.
Hmm.
And Eloise's story kind of makes me think the Pukwudgies may make themselves known to a child before they would an adult.
Yeah.
Or they get the sense that this particular person would be open to their existence.
Right.
You know, they're gonna have some level of trust. And so I think Eloise being alone helped. And mm-hmm. you know, the fact that they are curious in nature, you know, if she was doing something and they were like, what's she doing? Let's go see what they're doing. Now, Christopher Bolzano, he wrote a great book called Dark Woods, Cults, Crime, and the Paranormal in the Freetown State Forest. And this book contains two Pukwudgie accounts, and both of them are kind of creepy. Now, in the first one, a woman named Joan claimed that she was walking her dog in the forest on a spring day in the 1990s. Her dog ran off the path and dragged her into the woods. When the dog finally stopped, she found herself staring at a strange little being standing on a rock. She describes him as looking like a troll, 2 feet tall, with pale gray skin, hair on his arms and on the top of his head. His torso made up the majority of his body, and he had very short legs. She said his eyes were deep green, and he had large lips and a long, almost canine-like nose. So, needless to say, Joan was pretty shocked to see this thing. She stared at it, and it stared back at her. And she said, finally, the dog ran back to the path, and it pulled her away from it. Now, that's kind of weird, but here's the creepy part. Several times after seeing the creature in the woods, Joan woke up in the middle of the night to see it staring into her bedroom window.
Yeah, that's creepy.
And the nighttime visits didn't stop until Joan moved to another county.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Now, the second account in Dark Woods is told by a man named Tom. Now, Tom first saw a Pukwudgie when he was a teenager. He had snuck out of his parents' house one night to walk in the woods to clear his mind. Who the hell does that?
Yeah, no joke. I'm just going to walk in the dark woods at middle of the night by myself.
Right, to clear my mind.
Yeah.
Do you realize how much crap would be going through my mind if I was walking in the woods alone at night?
Exactly. That's what I was about to say. It would not clear my mind. It would fill it.
Clear.
Yeah, I would be worried not just about Pukwudgie or like any type of fae. I would be worried about wolves,
right?
Bear, anything that might bite me.
I would welcome a Pukwudgie.
Yeah, no joke. No joke.
Hey, dude, you can make fire. Come on.
Yeah, make some fire, scare off the bear and stuff.
Now, Tom says as he walked down this path, he saw a glowing light. Tom says, I noticed a dim light, like in the form of a ball, in front of me. It was white and it swelled like it was breathing. Said it rose to about my shoulders and then flew into the woods. So naturally, Tom followed it.
Yeah, well,
as anybody would do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, he's already walking. Already walking by himself in the middle of the night in the woods, yeah. So I'm not surprised. So,
yeah, why the hell not? Let's follow this mysterious light.
Eesh.
But he said he followed the light until it disappeared. And as he turned around to head back home, he noticed that he wasn't alone. A short man covered entirely in fur stood nearby. He was about 2 feet tall and had a nose like a wolf. Said the little man ran off into the trees and gave out this unearthly moan. Now, Tom was lucky or unlucky enough to see a Pukwudgie a second time. One night, he drove to one of the Freetown State Forest parking lots and sat in his car. Tom needs to get a life. Okay.
Yeah.
Tom, at least if you hadn't been listening, and no offense, but come on, man.
Yeah. At least a life that doesn't involve a lot of midnight wilderness romps.
Like, yeah. Here's the creepy part. Tom sat alone in his car in a parking lot at a state park.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, he turned off the engine and the headlights and turned the radio down, enjoying some of the solitude. Well, yeah, I mean, you're going to get that.
Yep, for sure.
But again, he realized that he wasn't out there all by himself. Standing in the darkness, staring at Tom, was the same little man he had seen in the woods. Now, the Pukwudgie was about 20 feet away, and he said he could see its eyes glowing red in the night. Said abruptly, the engine of Tom's car came on of its own accord, and the radio suddenly blared loudly. Hmm. So, panicked, Tom got the heck out of there.
Yeah.
As any normal person would do.
Most normal people wouldn't be there in the middle of the night, but whatever.
So, you know, you listen to these accounts, and like I said, they're modern. You know, these came, you know, within the last, 30 years, at least the majority of them did. And it's just, it's not the type of story that you would expect to hear in the modern era. Okay. Right. You know, I saw something weird. I saw a ghost. I saw a Wendigo. You know, I heard my name being called. All of that, Bigfoot, whatever. You can imagine. You don't really think about running into Pukwudgies, you know, or small, somewhat humanoid type creatures that have all these magical powers. That's just not something. And I don't know why. You could wrap your head around the idea that a werewolf may be out in these woods, but a Pukwudgie, well, that's absurd.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, why? You know, if you're willing to accept one, you ought to be at least willing to consider another. But even still, you don't think about these little gremlin-like creatures being out there.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, there's been just as many sightings of these things as there have been other cryptids in this area.
Right.
And you know, this what I say about people that see Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster and, you know, Ogopogo and any of these creatures. They saw something, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you can dismiss it as it being a misidentification of another animal, just a figment of their imagination. Maybe they got scared. And I'm sure that's true for a lot of these. But I can't imagine that it's true for all of them.
Right.
And I'm sure Tom didn't imagine his engine starting and his radio coming on without touching it. Especially if he specifically remembers turning everything off just so he could kind of sit in silence.
Yeah.
So, if this story is accurate, not only are these things curious, they are powerful.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like you wouldn't fear them at all because they could potentially kill you if they could start your engine from 20 feet away.
Yep. They definitely, from the stories, they've got power.
Oh, yeah.
And they can harness it for good or evil.
You know, so I really thought it was interesting that we were seeing these modern sightings, modern experiences of Pukwudgies. It certainly wasn't what I would have expected. But it makes you wonder. If it's not a Pukwudgie legend that people are adhering to, what is it?
Right.
I mean, what are these people seeing? What are they interacting with that gives them the impression that it is a little small gnome that hangs out in the woods?
Yeah. What animal could it be if you're misidentifying an animal?
Right. The way they describe it, I mean, they saw it well enough to know it wasn't an animal.
Right, right. And I mean, other than maybe a porcupine from the back, if you saw that, you might, oh, maybe that's a puckwudgie.
Yeah.
But if you're seeing it directly head on, there's nothing that you could mistake for that.
I know. I kept thinking like the canine like nose. That's a common thread through a lot of these stories, or an elongated nose. And then, you know, a porcupine fits the legend where they have these spikes on their back, you know, like going down the back of their head and spine. And then, of course, you know, a porcupine's going to have an elongated nose. But porcupines aren't 2 to 3 feet tall.
No.
I've never seen a porcupine outside of the zoo, but he was little.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he was like a small dog. And I would imagine they can, but I didn't witness a porcupine sitting up on its back legs.
No.
You know, certainly not standing up for any length of time to give the appearance of a small humanoid that was 2 to 3 feet tall.
Yeah. I know they can, but I don't think it's a regular occurrence for them.
Well, I would think all four-legged mammals like that can rear up.
Mm-hmm. But
can they do it for an extended period of time to appear human-like?
Yeah.
Or to appear bipedal.
Yeah, seriously doubt that.
Yeah, it doesn't fit, really. But at the end of the day, all of these stories are so fascinating because of the historical legends we have from the indigenous people of that area.
They've been seen for so long.
Yeah. You know, so it's not anything new. You know, there's been sightings and experiences for, you know, at least 2 or 3 centuries.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I ask, you know, what are they seeing if it's not a puckwudgie?
Right.
I don't know, but it is pretty interesting. And I'm sure we've got listeners up in that area. You know, I'm betting that you guys know these stories, about puckwudgies, or you were told one when you were a child, maybe a way to keep you from wandering off in the woods. Let us
maybe
know.
Maybe you ran into one.
What was that?
Maybe they ran into one.
Yeah, and I'm sure somebody listening may have seen one or had an experience that they thought, that wasn't it. And then when you go back in retrospect, you think, I don't know, maybe it was a puckwudgie.
Could have been a puckwudgie.
Let us know, you know, and if you know some of these stories, or if you've got friends or family that have had an experience with a puckwudgie, let us know. And the best place to do that is in our Facebook group. It's called The Graveyard. We've got thousands of members in there. It's a fantastic environment to share personal experiences, you know, those odd stories that you grew up with, because that's what we all just want to hear. Nobody's going to call you a loony or anything like that. It's a safe place to share those stories. When you're done there, you can check out our website, which is graveyardpodcast.com. There you can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise. Hey, summer will be here before you know it. If you need that new Graveyard Tales tank top, you know, to wear at the pool, you know, jump over there and find you some cool Graveyard Tales merchandise. You know, get that new aluminum cup that you can sit and have your tasty beverage by the swimming pool. You know, we really appreciate it. And, you know, we don't get rich off of the merchandise. Okay.
We just
love the fact that people would want to promote the show by having something with our name on it. But you can also become a patron. And as Adam mentioned at the beginning of the show, a lot of new stuff going on, for our patrons, and our newest show, Side Quest, available for our $10 patrons. So definitely check that out. And I tell you what, puckwudgies were fun. When you told me this, I was like, oh man, We're finally going to do this.
Yep.
I wasn't expecting to find everything I did. So Adam, that's about it for Puck Wedgies.
Yep.
And until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.